it at all by the ribbons or your, any other?
Early on he was, Nikki. Probably the first game back, and then it started trending for sure better. But I think it's fair to say the first game after Carolina, not sure who that was against, and then, like, that's an injury that gets better.
So that question, in case you couldn't hear it there from Nikki Javala, is the rib injury bothering Jaden Daniels? Dan Quinn says no, and made it seem like it was bothering him more against the Bears a few weeks ago than it would be now. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. It's Friday, November 15th. We're at Third Hill Brewing in Silver Spring off Georgia Ave. We will be here until 6:30 for our Friday field trip. As Washington continues to build the foundation for success on and off the field, it's time for you to think about your future as well. The exclusive sponsor of our show will help. That's our buddies, Kondori and Murrah. They'll help you update your last will and testament, set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today. Go to kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We got to thank them again for bringing us to Philly, putting us up. Excellent accommodations, as always.
As always, man.
And we had the best seats in the house for what was, for three quarters, a really good, entertaining, fun experience. And then the fourth quarter happened.
Yeah, it was an AFC North game, masquerading as two high-powered offenses for three quarters. And then it all came crashing down. But, yeah, that was a blast, man. Such a cool thing. Good experience. I mean, as much as I despise Philadelphian fans, et cetera, I could still spin two plates. The Lincoln Financial Field, next to the Wachovia Center, next to Citizens Bank Park, we need that.
They all share a parking lot.
That's it.
The problem is we'll never have that,
yeah.
Right? I mean, because it would take somewhere in D.C. where you could do it. And that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to, like, not have a highly expensive condo building for 50 feet. You can't do that.
How could you?
Who's going to go for that? So, you know, I understand it's not possible because the land. But I'm telling you, that situation is outstanding.
So before we get to the calls, Game Balls and Gassers, 800-636-1067. And I do want to dive into why they lost here with you coming up later in the segment. The audio Clary just played coming in there on Dan Quinn talking Jaden Daniels. So I saw this last night everywhere, and I understand why it's happening, and it very, very well could be the case. Like, he does not look the same in terms of willingness to run, the twitch when he does run, the explosiveness when he leaves the pocket, even as a passer, whether not just accuracy or like working back from the result, but mechanically, he's falling away from throws. Is he doing that to protect his body from oncoming defenders? I was watching the game back on the train with Darius, and you know, we kept saying, like, why isn't he moving in the pocket like he did? Like, even on the plays where he's pressured, there's one defender that's bearing down on him. And a month ago, 6 weeks ago, he just kind of sidesteps that guy and buys himself a little more time, that natural pocket movement. A lot of those things are not happening like they were a month ago. So I think what a lot of people have decided is, well, it's the rib. And then when I watched the broadcast today, we were at the game, so we didn't see this. I didn't notice it. But when you watch the game, how many times did they show him getting his rib wrapped? You know, or some type of, they'd go down to Kaylee Hartung, and she's like, yeah, Jaden Daniels is bleeding from the finger. And oh, by the way, his rib has a package that just got delivered, and someone taped it onto him. And it's like, well, if there's nothing wrong with his rib, why are they constantly working on it on the sideline?
Yeah, and then last night I think he had that cut on his hand that they glued together. So, you know, that's the normal wear and tear of the NFL. And I couldn't handle it, certainly. But, you know, these guys are obviously built different.
You stood up yesterday and hurt your knee.
I did. And this is not even a joke. It's not right. I had to step over cords that were on the ground. That's the end of the story, and I hurt my knee. It's not right, and I need to go to the doctor.
We were driving back from the bar yesterday to the hotel, and Danny's like, hey, GP, I'm really serious about my knee. And I was like, no way, dude. Like, what do you mean?
He's like, they're like, oh, you're making fun. Ha, ha, ha. Like, you're twisted because you're old. Like, you're fine.
And then we're, like, walking up and down the steps at the stadium, and Danny's, like, really struggling, and I'm like, Is this isn't from the thing at the bar when you just stood up, right? Is it totally is?
It totally is. First of all, that's a good me. I didn't know you could do that. That's annoying. Second of all, it was going downstairs. Like, it hurt. Like, it's whatever the front thing is. I don't know if it's a patella, if it's a medial collateral. I don't know, but it's messed up.
Jaden wasn't the only one not 100% yet.
Yeah, and I still did everything I could to win the game.
Through it. But here's my issue with this.
Go ahead.
Is, I guess, like, they're playing better defenses. That is part of why this is happening.
Of course, it's no one explanation. Anybody who wants to make it one is wrong.
This is not a Jaden Daniels' rib is not right thing. The Cliff Kingsbury second half of the season regression has to be talked about.
Yes.
I don't know if this is happening now, but it happened every year in Arizona. There aren't as many wide open receivers. We were at the game. We were watching. The All-22 will be available in short order for all of the scouts that want their NFL Game Pass subscriptions. You could check that out. I'm not saying there's never open receivers, but there's a little bit of everything here. But he just didn't play that well. Now, do I think his rib is bothering him? Of course. But if his rib was a problem, like a real legitimate problem, would they be running him on quarterback draws? We're a month removed. No one said his rib was bothering him against the Bears when he played pretty well, threw for a career-high 320. The Hail Mary where he's torquing his body, throwing it 60 yards in the air. Rib was fine. That was a month ago or whatever that was. I don't remember when he had two touchdowns, no picks, and the offense hummed against the Giants and looked pretty good, and he made the unbelievable touchdown throw before the half to Terry McLaurin. I don't remember that day that the rib was a problem, but the rib was a little bit of an issue against the Steelers, and then it was a big issue last night. So I'm just not completely sold on that. I do think it's a thing, but in my pie of what's going on offensively, it's not as big a sliver as some other things.
So the thing, I think there's nuance to it, and people are going to hear this incorrectly. I'm not comparing myself to Jaden Daniels. Just trying to offer an example. My senior year, I was hit on this weird bone in my wrist with a fastball. Deep bone bruise. Wasn't broken, but it hurt, and it bothered me for about 2 weeks. The subsequent 2 weeks, I didn't hit very well. And then the 2.5 weeks after that, I hit even worse. Because what I was doing before I even realized it was compensating for this injury that I had. It was nagging and a pain in the butt. My swing got all fouled up. I wasn't staying on the ball. I hit terribly for basically a month plus because of something that only kept me out of a game for 2 days. This is what's happening, in my opinion. He was guarding and protecting the ribs. So the throw against Cincinnati to Terry McLaurin that is ungodly, that 10% completion percentage throw to win the game basically into the corner of the end zone, he got a shot right in the face basically from it because he stepped in, stood his ground, and did that. You said it last night, or you said it just now, the spinning off, the fading away, the backing off of some of those throws. And again, this is the hardest thing to do in sports, right? Is play quarterback and just say, yep, stand in there. Take a shot from a 260-pound dude running a 4-4. But that's the gig. You saw it on that most important one. The best example of this was that Noah Brown kind of deep crosser where Brown's got a step. And that's either a huge gain or a touchdown if it's thrown well, right? Just because the space and the momentum, it falls way short and probably could have been intercepted. You look back at that, he's backtracking already, and he's spinning off and falling away on that throw. That, to me, is a byproduct and a bad habit that came from nursing this injury.
That's very possible.
If it's as you already said, I understand it's not going to keep him out of the lineup, but if it's also nothing, why are we wrapping it every time? Why is it always treatment? There's something going on. It's not going to keep him out. It shouldn't. But there's a difference between he's physically healthy enough to do it, and then maybe some of these bad habits that he's picked up. I think this 10-day break could not come at a better time for him, both to heal up and then kind of get back in the lab, be able to see some of these things. Oh, my gosh, I'm fading away that badly. Probably doesn't even realize it's happening. I think you can get right back on track with some of these throws I think he's kind of slipped mechanically because he's compensating.
Yeah, it reminds me of the conversation about Robert Griffin we used to have where it's like, is he playing hurt or not? The definition of like injury versus hurt versus pain. Like, should he be on the field? Should he not be on the field? He is perfectly capable of playing.
Absolutely.
As we have seen. Mm-hmm. You can't even tell a difference with how he moves or, frankly, how he throws the football. I remember before the Bears game, so that whole week after the Carolina game, when we were doing shows saying, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Everyone is glued to his pregame warm-up. He comes out, he does his basketball bit, he's running around, and he starts throwing the ball. Same torque, same kind of whip, you know, same release. He's rotating his hips. Everything looks kind of normal, right? Game's going to be different. But we saw it in the game. I thought at the end of the first half against the Bears when they didn't throw the Hail Mary, if you remember, they had a chance at midfield to let one rip, and they didn't. And in the press box, we're talking about this, and we came to the conclusion, well, maybe they don't think he has the ability to, like, torque his whole body and launch the ball up into the air. Maybe they should have brought on Mariota to do it. Now, an hour and a half later, he threw the Hail Mary to win the game, and obviously he had no problem doing that. There was no pain, whatever. Last night, end of the first half, which, by the way, this annoyed me. Do you guys remember that the last play of the first half from midfield, they handed the ball to Brian Robinson?
Do not understand that.
For, like, 4 yards? What was that?
Yeah, so the people that are just as a quick side, who ran and raved about, how do you not kick the field goal on that fourth down? fine. That's mine.
Yes.
This is my, what are we doing
in that
circumstance?
You did the hard part. You got the ball back with 20-some seconds, right? You get to midfield. You actually would have been in field goal range if De'Ami Brown doesn't drop the ball. Would have been a 58-yard field goal. But maybe better is that you have now a chance to throw the ball into the end zone and see if you can get your second Hail Mary in a calendar month. And I guess Dan Quinn decided there's just no way we can get a Hail Mary. Because, oh wait, they can. I remember I watched it. Why did they do that? They just, I've never seen a team at midfield hand the ball off to a running back. Like, that is, that defies logic to me. To give up when you are in striking distance of the end zone, unless, again, you don't think he can throw it to the end zone. We know that's not the case. We've seen him throw deep several times since the injury. But I think you're right. I think there are some bad habits mechanically, maybe that come from the rib being on his mind. I also don't know. He doesn't seem to be wearing anything on the field different than what he did before. And Quinn's on record publicly saying they were not going to have him wear any type of flak jacket or guard or anything. But I was thinking maybe he could be wearing something that changes, you know, like a basketball player wearing a mask or something. But we haven't seen that. I don't think he's wearing anything. So I just think a lot of things are happening. But what we cannot excuse or pretend not to acknowledge is they've played the two best defenses they're going to play.
Another huge part of it.
In the last calendar week.
Yep.
It's harder to move the ball and score 30 points against Philly than it is Carolina or Pittsburgh. And there's a Cliff Kingsbury conversation therein that we'll have. Hopefully they just get right and they go pound the Cowboys, who are terrible, and then they shove it on the Titans, who are not good either. But this is definitely going to be one of the bigger stories of the week ahead. I think there's no doubt about that.
Without question. Because this is – everybody always wants to say, is it this one thing? And the answer is no. People hate that when there's multiple answers, multiple reasons, multiple ingredients into the dish, or, you know, big slivers of the pie. But that's what's happening. A number of things are going on here. I think you've touched on all three. The one I would add is against really good defenses, which is 100% who they've played over the last 5 days, is – maybe they're a player or two short here or there. You know, like a guy like Marshawn Lattimore, I think really would have helped last night in some of those moments. They need a couple more dudes like that. That's why they went and got one, right? But you look at, how they're built. There's a huge amount of cap space, powder dry, they left for this year, and they've got $100 million for next year. If they had maxed out this year and were already pretty much pot committed for next year, I'd go, uh-oh. Right? They didn't do a great job, but it's like, no. They got flexibility to add to this group, and adding they will, right? I think that's also a huge part of it, where you can get away with it against a Cleveland team that's all but quit, or Carolina, who's horrendous, right? You don't need anything. In those kind of matchups, you probably need one more dude. And he's not coming. There's nobody here that can do that, but that's also kind of part of the equation to me. So that's probably a small ingredient, but I think that's part of the pie.
Put it in the stew. I'm fine with that. One other thing I want to talk about Daniels-wise, and this is very specific to Daniels, not the offensive structure or whatever, but he has had his two least productive rushing performances in these two games. So he ran for 5 yards against Pittsburgh,
yep,
and then 18 yards last night against the Eagles, his two lowest totals of the year, 23 yards over two games. If you take any other two games sample this year, the lowest two-game stretch he had of rushing yards was 72 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That happened when he missed 3 of the 8 quarters in that two-game sample against Carolina. Meaning, in one quarter and in the 4 quarters before, he had 72 rushing yards, the lowest in a two-game span. In these two games, he had 23. What did all of the analysts that we had on at the beginning of the year say? This guy can make plays from the pocket. He can throw. He's a dynamic runner. Incredible dual threat. But the one thing they kept saying was, you've got to try to keep him in the pocket. That's how you take away the superpower, the extending of the plays, the creativity outside the pocket. We saw it with Jalen Hurts last night.
Yes.
When Jalen Hurts was in the pocket, he's just looking. He's a different guy. I'll play that guy every single day of the week, and I'll beat him most of the time. But when he starts getting out of the pocket, and now all of a sudden A.J. Brown is wiggling in the secondary and finding a little soft spot, it's a different world. And the last two teams have kept him in the pocket. And that's how you beat this team right now. Daniels is a very capable passer. People hear that and they act like I'm saying all the guy does is run. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. But when you keep him where you want him, seeing the field from his drop in his plant area, just standing in the tackle box, restrictive area, he's just not going to be as effective. And the last two teams have done that better.
So, again, I think that's part of it. Then also goes back to Kingsbury and adjustments or lack thereof. If you keep him in the pocket like he did last night, now, again, I'm not watching the All-22. I'm sitting right next to where you were sitting, but it's not like a bunch of dudes are running free. You know what I mean? So, like, when you're keeping him in the pocket with four, covering with seven, all of a sudden, you know what's available? The swing pass, check down to Eckler. Another check down to Eckler. The check down to Eckler's open. Watch for the check down to Eckler. Nothing is happening in the middle of the field, down the field, et cetera, like it was a couple weeks ago, where if you said, keep him in the pocket, fill in the blank team that's not that good, good luck with that. You got a guy probably with momentum that's going to run and take this little 10-yard hitch and go for 30.
Yeah.
That wasn't available to me last night. Now, again,
not someone, as often.
Yeah, someone from the All-22 could tell you, no, he missed this, that, and the other. Again, I'm watching from the side, but I'm trying to watch the play unfold.
There's definitely less wide-open receivers. That was the name of the game in the early part of the year.
Yeah.
He's just throwing to open dudes all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Everything highlight you think of for the most part, you know, you're throwing to a guy somewhere who's got no one around him, right? Other than some of the really amazing throws he made in the Cincinnati game and otherwise to Terry. But he also just wasn't seeing it. Like, they did something to fluster him where he was not getting the ball out as fast. Even on the checkdowns, it's not like it was quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Nothing was happening in a fluid way, it didn't feel like. He just wasn't comfortable, really, from start to finish. Kevin's in Arlington on Grant and Danny. Kevin, who gets your game ball? Who gets your gasser, buddy?
I'll give that to you in a second, but just to continue what you're saying, the one time we finally, other than the touchdown drive in the first half, got it going again was when we went to tempo and we weren't letting them substitute, and we get it all the way down to it, you know, close to the red zone. We get 9 yards on first down, and then the next three plays are my gasser. I'll talk about that after the game ball. The big picture, here's the thing. It's talent. And let's be positive. Last year in Philly, what do you have? You have A.J. Brown schooling Forbes, schooling Rivera. Last night, you have Sanders still hanging with Brown, Quinn hanging with the best team in the NFC. But people keep saying Detroit. They got Goff, okay? No, Philadelphia, 1-53 is the best team in the NFL, and Baltimore's going to find that out. Because you know what? Saquon's better than Henry. But, you know, so game ball goes to Mikey Sandersville and getting us to where we're talking about the playoffs a couple weeks before Thanksgiving. Gasser, what were they doing in that three-play sequence? I usually don't go down to the minutia of play calls. But for God's sake, if you get stuffed as we did on second down, south third down, aren't you going to say, you know what, James Daniels is our guy. We've rode him all year. Put it in his hands. And if he can't get it on third, maybe he can get it on fourth. Instead, we run it. You think the Bengals take it out of Joe Burrow's hands? I don't think so. And that's to your point earlier, Grant, about pocket passing versus dual threat. But you know what? You got to let him take shots. I don't know what the hell we were doing on that three-play sequence, and it flipped the game. Nobody can convince me otherwise. That cost us the game because we threw up on ourselves.
Well, appreciate you, buddy. I mean, the game changed at that moment unequivocally. There's just no denying that. I get that that sequence is maddening. I think I'm in the minority. I was more annoyed by the sequence at the end of the game where with 3 minutes to go, they're at the 32-yard line, and on 52 seconds down to the two-minute warning, they ran twice, and those were the only two plays. They ran the ball two times in a row, still didn't get a first down, and let 52 seconds elapse. You're down 16. You're not down 19. If you score and get a two-point conversion, you can still get the ball back and have a chance to win the football game. At least before, they could explain away, well, the reason we did that was we needed a foot. We thought Robinson would get it. Then we didn't get it, so we thought Robinson would get the foot and a half. This time, there's no explanation.
No.
Al Michaels had no idea that it was a 16-point game. He's 90 and should be, you know, not calling the game at this point. He has no energy. Kirk Herbstreit didn't know what was going on. I'm not paying him $12 million or whatever to know what's going on. Why were they acting like the game was over with 3 minutes to go? I don't understand that.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. The second run to get you to the two-minute warning, I'm going, okay, they were going to get the two-minute warning anyhow by hook or by crook, right? So fine, but the first one I didn't understand either. You see, does that make any sense? Like after you called the first one, which I'm going no, wrong. Talking about the two runs. The second run, you look up at the clock. You go, you probably wouldn't be able to complete a pass inbounds then get back and get another playoff or spike it or whatever before the two-minute warning. That was going to get to the two-minute warning anyhow. So the second run, I guess, made a little bit more sense to me. But the first one reflected, what I think your larger point, which still stands, is where's my urgency? I don't have it. Where is it? Like, be urgent. Be quick. Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up. Win, lose, or draw, hurry up right there to even give yourself a shot.
What'd you like? What didn't you like? That's what we're asking you on Grant and Danny, and why did they lose the game? We'll get into that next. You're listening to G&D. We're out and about. It's our Friday field trip. We're going to be here until 6:30 at Third Hill Brewing. We're in Silver Spring off Georgia Avenue. The Commanders are 7-4. That's the bad news. The good news is they get to play a really bad Cowboys team.
Isn't that fun?
Oh, the Cowboys are so terrible.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Fan.
Terry didn't get his first target until like the early third quarter.
Yeah, it wasn't going that way, and it wasn't certainly. I didn't feel, you know, going, you know, specifically to him to go. But you're right, you know, our explosive plays to get generated from Terry, you know, such a big part of what we do. And if somebody had to say we're taking this player away with a double or something than other guys, that's a bigger factor. But I didn't sense that was the case, Ben.
That was Dan Quinn post game. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Thanks for making the show part of your day. We'll take you up to 6:30. We're at Third Hill Brewing in Silver Spring. We're going to be out here until the end of the program for our Friday field trip.
This place is really cool. The food stuff's awesome. I had a turkey avocado club, but it was on a banh mi bit of bread. Nice little curveball there. Normally comes with pesto. I subbed in a chipotle mayo because it helped the bacon, which I added, pop on the sandwich. Just a wee bit. The pickle was very strong as well. Good beverages, good fellowship, dare I say, good fun. Here at Third Hill Brewing.
Speaking of good, Austin Eckler last night.
Yeah.
8 for 89. Season highs for him on 9 targets. His best play was when he literally dragged Bond, the linebacker from Philly, 17 yards. Now, some of that was like it was awkward. He got his hand on his shoulder and didn't have a great angle to bring him down. But the last 14 or so, like, Eckler was legit just saying, you're coming for a ride, buddy.
Yeah, we're going. So do you want to go? It's fine if you want to go, but we're both going.
And your guy, Zach Ertz, was fantastic.
Yes, he was.
Zach Ertz had the one-handed catch to move the chains
that
at one
unreal.
Point. They dropped a flag for PI that they picked up, but it was a great catch. And then the two-point conversion catch
was legit.
That was ridiculous.
Yes, it was.
Nobody in the stadium thought he caught it. They ruled it incomplete. He didn't argue. The Commanders all went back to their sideline. And watching the Amazon Prime broadcast, Michaels and Herb Street were like on to the kickoff.
Yeah, clear as day. Both those feet were down somehow in a play that he wasn't open for. So, yeah, that was his best game. Good for him. That was good. I think it was well needed. Also, yards after the catch. This is the thing that this is the part that I've cared about where I've gone, this is what's so frustrating about him. One, the drops and or putting the ball on the ground or, you know, the occasional fumble here and there, not holding on and squeezing it. But the other part, the biggest frustration for me has been an utter lack of yards after the catch, when he's catching the ball on the run or on the move where he's got some separation, which he does well. That's the thing that he's good at still, is getting open, finding soft spots in zones, beating man, using his body, and his smarts, his veteran savvy. And last night he had a couple bursts where he caught the ball either short of the sticks or right at them, got you a couple extra yards. Those things matter to me. And he was good last night.
I just also would add that Daniels' best play was the two-point conversion. He scrambled around, he bought time, he went one way, came back the other. It was kind of shades of the Hail Mary where he was just like waiting for someone to come free. Mm-hmm. He actually had Noah Brown wide open about a yard into the end zone, just like no one around him, could have done snow angels standing up if he wanted to. But he made the more difficult throw, and it was a really good ball to have covered Zach Ertz to get the two-point conversion. I thought that play, which kept the game alive for the moment, was his best of the night. Let's go to the phones and go to Noel, who's in Philly. On Grant and Danny. We were just in Philly.
We were there.
That's coincidental.
You were. Yes. And may I just say, my game ball goes to the two of you for your review of your Philly experience.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Danny, your Delco accent was perfect. Your review of Game Day SEPTA was perfect. I have no notes. It was all perfect.
Thank you, sir.
That train, by the way, can kick rocks.
Yeah.
That thing, whatever, like, I've never seen more people not moving standing side by side. I don't think there's more people in Times Square before the ball drops than there were just waiting to get on the train last night for about an hour after the game. That was a tough go. You've done that before, I take it.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that.
Is our guy gone? Is he still there? I don't think there's no way he called up just to tell us he liked what
Here's
we said.
Here's a great Delco accident. Okay, right. Bye.
We'll take that. Colby in Falls Church, you're on Grant and Danny. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
I want to say my game ball is going to go to Zach Ertz. Danny, I know you got some problems with him running after the catch, but, I mean, the other receivers aren't even catching the ball.
Yep, so. He was great last night.
The catch is an important part, too, you know.
Yeah.
And he's doing that. And, you know, he did that in the Pittsburgh game. He did that last night. I mean, he's a solid option for Jay Daniels after Terry.
No, he for sure is. And I appreciate the phone call. He's a great security blanket. And I think people have a misnomer. Like, you make fun that, like, I'm somehow, like, this anti-Zach Ertz person or whatever, and it's all good fun. We have a good time here on the program. He has a valuable place. He is really important, and I'm glad he's here. I agree with the signing, agree with putting him on the football field. He can be helpful. He had a huge drop last week against Pittsburgh, first of all. He's had a couple of those this year that have been really frustrating. But the no yak Zach situation was a real one before last night. He was really good last night. I get more of that.
I don't remember what yak. I mean, he at one point he had like 4 yards where he didn't get tackled right away.
It wasn't was like crazy. No, it's not like he rumbled down the field and was doing a, yeah. You know, I don't know, an Antonio Gates.
I don't remember lots of yak Zach from last night.
I'm telling you, this is dramatically superior to catch and fall down and please hold on to the ball, just be safe when he's got some separation. Last night he, you know, caught the ball short of the sticks once and got past them. That was world beating for that guy. So, yes, he 100% has value. I would just simply like to see Ben Sinnott a couple of times here and there.
I just don't believe and can't figure out why they don't throw him the ball more in the red zone. His only touchdown, I believe, before last night was in the Carolina game for Marcus Mariota, who threw a touchdown and threw a touchdown to Sinnott. It were their only tight end touchdowns of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But he finally caught one from Jaden in garbage time, if you want to call it.
By the way, it was a brilliant route right there. Set his defender up, left the guy in his wake. So, yes, he can absolutely play, and he should.
Let's go to Gibbs in Connecticut, listening on the Odyssey app. You can listen to us every day. Pause and rewind the show for free on the Odyssey app. What's up? How are you?
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, bro.
What I liked and didn't like, me and my friends in the car Thursday, listen, Danny, that story about the guy spilling the coffee, that was hilarious. We were laughing for like 20 minutes.
Thank you. My pants, by the way, dry now, finally. My jeans
dry.
Are dry.
Good,
yeah.
Good. One thing I don't like is after the game, I'm all mad. I go into Twitter, look in the comments, which was a bad decision.
That's how you calm down. Good job.
giving up on everything. We're 7-2. They expect Jane Daniels to be prime Tom Brady every single game. He's still 23. He's not going to look great every game. He's the reason we're here. So everyone has to pump the brakes, let the kid have 10 days to rest, and then we'll see how he is.
Yeah, so the only mistake you made was going to Twitter and caring about what anybody said. That's going to be the issue there, right? Appreciate the phone call. I mean, that is a place where everyone's just venting. You're catching the extreme version of everyone. If they're happy, they're more happy. Yeah. If they're angry, they're going to be more salty. But if there was a takeaway yesterday that was some grandiose declaration about, see, I told you, in any direction, honestly, whether that's Kingsbury's offense will be solved and now it has, or Jaden Daniels is not who you thought he was, or whatever silly things being said, geese are just, they're flapping their wings.
Mm-hmm.
You let them do it. Don't pay them any attention. Remember, we don't have to give people a seat at our table. They don't have to sit with us.
Grown-ups can have conversations.
We can discuss things.
We can do it.
We can banter. Not everyone gets a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And crazy takes don't need to be rewarded. Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville on Greg and Dave. What's up, Chris?
What's up, guys?
Hey, Bob.
Listen, the Eagles have a superior roster, so I'm not upset about the outcome of the game. Right, if you look at the game beginning of the season, you probably think that's a loss on the road. What I'm upset about are the things that could be controlled, particularly the decision to not kick a field goal. And you know, you could say, well, the analytics suggest this, the analytics suggest that. You can't replace a coach with a probability stat.
Well, let me just say real quick, the analytics, Chris, just so you know, said to kick a field goal last night.
Well, exactly. So I don't understand. You know your team's struggling. If the analytics also say kick the field goal, right, what was the thinking there?
And don't hang up on them for me, Claire. I'm just going to go back and forth. I think the logic I would guess is, other than the Ertz spot last week, they were, I believe, 13 for 13 on fourth down. And you have a cheat code. And on all of their designed rollout, whatever you want to call that, boots, naked, powers, all that stuff with Jaden running, they are batting 1,000 on the season. And he has not seen them be stopped. And I've been calling him the cheat code. Third and one, third and two, fourth and one, fourth and two.
But he wasn't
they have not
the
been
cheat
stopped.
Code last night. He had not shown the ability to escape
totally
or get away from anyone throughout the game. And in the context of the game, when the offense had struggled the entire time, they had not been running on all cylinders, Quinn knew that. I don't understand that decision. I feel like, hey, you kick that field goal, you take the lead. Even if the Eagles run right back down the field, you're still only a one-possession game. If the Eagles go and then kick a field goal after missing it, now it's a two-possession game no matter what. I hated that decision.
I get it. So, first of all, I agree with you. I would have kicked the field goal. In fact, we're all sitting there, and we were shocked that they went for it.
We were surprised, yeah.
Old Riverboat Dan. But I would have... Almost always, as much as I would always go for it, I would have kicked it. But what I said right away to you guys was, I don't hate this. Like, I'm kicking this right here, but I don't really have a problem either way. If they don't get it, I'm not going to be livid.
And we'll discuss it. I think we should. I think we can have a mature convo about it. That's the way I felt, too. I go, I probably would have kicked that, but I don't have the disgust that some people do.
Like, if it was a 55-yard field goal,
yep,
then it's a no-brainer go. If it's a 15-yard field, well, I don't think that's possible. If it's a 20-yard field goal, then I think it's a no-brainer kick probably. To put a ball on the foot of your guy who's been here multiple weeks and say, hey, the lead is on your foot. We're taking the ball out of Jaden Daniels and this offense's hands that before last night, before this past calendar week, was maybe the best in the league. I don't have a big problem with that. At its core, you said, well, why would he have done that? Because he bet on Daniels. I'd rather bet on Daniels than bet on Zane Gonzalez.
And I'd also add an addition, and this may, who knows if this entered his mind or not, but just me thinking out loud, where they were, you hold the ball then, if you get this first down, for another couple of minutes as you run a few more plays to matriculate the ball down the field. You've now narrowed the window for Philadelphia possessions. In other words, you're basically saying with what would have been, had it gone according to the plan, 5:56 minutes left of Philadelphia with the football and their chance to then take a lead coming back at you if you score a touchdown. Even if you kick a field goal later in that possession, you're now talking about running a couple of minutes off. That's now a then, either way, if we stop them or we don't, we'll have a chance with the football back to go win it, right? Like I think that may have been part of it as well. We had some momentum. We're driving down the field. Let's run a bit more clock to get something positive there too. I think that may have entered into it.
That was a good call by Chris in Hyattsville, who's actually the Maryland listener that originally started to tell us, hey, when you guys do these field trips,
demanded
Maryland better be represented.
He said that.
Yeah, and that's
this whole thing was his idea.
Last week, Rockville
yep.
/ Bethesda. This week,
north of
we are in Bethesda. Silver Spring. Third Hill Brewing is where the show is live from today on our Friday field trip. We're here until 6:30. It's Friday, which means, in lieu of a double play, we'll win off the field next on G&D. Every Friday, in lieu of a double play, we win off the field. Driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. The way we win off the field is very simple. We tally up our little tiny mini blessings.
It's got to be so insignificant.
Something where you were lucky, something fortuitous, bounced your way, but nobody else would care about it.
Nobody cares.
This can't be a significant thing. This can't be a game changer, life changer. The example I'll give you is really the ultimate winning off the field ever. I'm buying food at the concession stand last night at Lincoln Financial Field.
All right.
I buy my drink. I buy my little sliver of pizza. Lady asks if I need anything else. I said, if you don't mind sliding me a pretzel and popcorn when nobody's looking, that would be great. It was a joke. That's all it was a joke. And then she slid me pretzel and popcorn. She didn't ask me to pay for it. She just gave it to me. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. Good to talk to you, buddy. I got a quick one. So this morning, I go down for breakfast. I didn't want to bother you guys. I got up a little earlier. I
figured, yeah, what happened to that 8 a.m. breakfast plan we made in the elevator?
I didn't know how reliable that was
okay.
for you guys. I mean, Darius was out looking for a Wawa or a 7-Eleven at 2 a.m. I knew you were going to go back and watch the game over again on your laptop.
Oh, sure.
Whereas I was able to go to bed. excuse me. So what I did, I got up a little bit early, went down to get my breakfast. And so I've eaten the breakfast, no problem. And I go to get myself a cup of coffee in the to-go cup because it's the whole point of waking up in the mornings to have your coffee. And I go over to the it's not a thermos. What do you call that? The carafe? Is that the right word? The big one. It's the big situation that they got where you're making a bunch of coffee for people, right? And so I put the cup under there, look for the coffee, empty. Bum, 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 right? You know, I'm okay, but I really wanted another cup of coffee. As I'm about to kind of look around, do the John Travolta in the house with Mia Wallace in Pulp Fiction, if you know your movies from the mid-90s, and I'm sort of making this face, not sure what to do, I hear a voice approaching. Got a fresh pot right here. Move the old one right out of the way. The first pour from the new carafe of coffee went to me. Not somebody else, not some business traveler, not some chotch, not some plumber Magoo. No, this guy right here with two thumbs pointing at himself. I got the hot toppers. How does it get be fresh and so clean? Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Darius, tonight you won't have to walk around in the streets of Philadelphia at 1:30 in the morning. Therefore, you are.
Winning off the field.
By the way, this is a wacky bit.
Bruce Springsteen sang a song about this, by the way.
Really? What was the song?
It's called Streets of Philadelphia. It like basically chronicles what you did last night.
There's no reason you did this, but just tell the people what you told us today.
This is tough. So
maybe it'll make more sense to them.
So last night we get back to the hotel. After midnight, I would say. Close to 1 a.m.
Yes, I would say, I'm going to say 12:40.
Yeah, 12:35, 12:40.
I was parched. But the hotel didn't have any kind of, say, convenience store in it or anything like that. There's nothing in the refrigerator.
Yeah, no water cooler. There's nothing.
So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to go see if there's a 7-Eleven locally. There's one about 0.3 miles away.
Everybody catch that, by the way?
It's now after 1 a.m.
We are after 1 a.m., yes.
When you've made this decision. The city of Philadelphia.
In the city of Philadelphia.
We don't know where we are.
Downtown.
We don't know. It seemed like a nice enough area downtown. But I don't know if you've watched the news. Again, we're in Philadelphia. It's 1+ in the morning. Darius goes, you know what's a great idea in this city I don't know? I'm going to go walk around and look for a 24-hour convenience store. Not a thing I would do, but please continue.
I did try to go do so. I walked all the way around, you know, I guess about three, four blocks, just for the 7-Eleven that said online that it was open 24 hours to be closed. Yes, the 7-Eleven was closed. There was a white piece of paper on the door that somebody handwritten and said, closed, will reopen at 4:30 a.m.
That's when you know it's a great, that's a well-run establishment.
It's a great establishment.
The old handwritten
note. Where's that guy at?
Do we have a printer?
I got to run out for 2 hours. I got some errands to run at 2 in the morning.
Write the note down.
He said.
Write it down.
I'm so sure, by the way.
Never been
more sure about anything. So then, of course, you said, you came to your senses. You said, I'm 5 blocks from our hotel. It's 1:42 in the morning. I'm the only person out. I'm the only good guy out still. Only bad guys are out at that hour. Apparently, you didn't have that chat.
The best it could be is a drunken buffoon.
There are working people out there somewhere.
Very few.
Well, they were right below my window.
They start at 4. You know, they come home at like 2. You're in that window there where it's just you and people looking to bash windows for stuff inside.
I will say, it was cold, and I didn't feel great about walking through some of those alleys that I walked through in Philadelphia. I didn't feel great about that.
Weird.
Why are you taking the Allisons? What are you doing?
By the way, I can't even believe you were in an alley. This is so stupid.
Please. least, okay. You need to just walk in the center of a main road, by the way. Not even on the sidewalk, in the main road.
So then you decide, I'll just go back to the hotel, and I won't bother with a drink, and I'll go to bed, like a normal person.
No, I did not. I then Uber-eatsed something. I Uber-eatsed Wawa and got myself a bottle of water and a honey bun.
At 2:30 in the morning.
2:30 in the morning.
Just in time for his dentist appointment.
By the way, I don't even – so what is a bottle of water? Do they put the wood in the
No, he was
bottle?
In Philly, so he absorbed it.
Yeah. We're doing that, yep.
Guys, I'm real thirsty, so I need some water. I'm real thirsty.
This guy's in Philly for 24 hours, and he calls it water.
It was a good bottle of water. What can I say?
Dude, it's straight from the Schuylkill.
What a time.
Water.
He's just wandering around.
Do you have any flavor ice?
I don't want to like put this out into the world.
Yeah.
I'm glad he was okay.
Seriously.
But like, think about this. Had something terrible have happened and Darius perished last night,
how would y'all have known?
We wouldn't have known.
Well, not only would he have been missing and we would have not known where he was and all this stuff, which is terrible. I could still see like the Dateline NBC show in 10 years where they're going, nobody knows what he was up to. Like, why was he walking around?
Yeah. Robert Stack on Unsolved Mysteries. We have no idea where he is.
It's 1:30 in the morning. There's like, it's an interview with me, and I'm like, yeah, he said goodnight. He said he was going to meet us in the lobby at 8 a.m., and then he was walking around 6 blocks away.
Like, we all took the elevator together. He got off on the 12th floor, and that's the last we saw
him. The only assumption would be a drug deal, or you were going to get drugs. Like, no one would think, oh, he's probably parched. Probably trying to find a 7-Eleven.
He wanted a bottle of water. And so I said to Darius. And this
water.
Is,
not
or
water.
Water, rather. Water.
Yeah, he doesn't drink water.
It's a different substance.
Water.
Water. Yeah. This is not only for Darius, but for anybody. The play is to go to the hotel gym. You go to the hotel gym, and you fill up a water. Right? That's what you do. Now, Darius' point is I didn't have like something to fill it up
with.
Yeah,
I didn't have a
They're
going
to have a little cup in there.
But that would have been a good idea.
That's the play.
The hotel gym only has water. He was looking for water.
Water.
Yeah.
He needed water.
And water only exists where? At 24-hour 7-Eleven.
That'd be correct.
7-Eleven. Or to Wawa around the way.
Yeah.
So to finish the segment off, I don't have to do that tonight. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Thank you, Bruce.
And you didn't get mugged.
And I didn't get mugged.
You know, that's
true. Nice? That's a good point.
You didn't
nice
get
to not get
murdered.
Mugged?
Nobody took a blade and shoved it into your side.
That's a great point. Therefore, I am. Yeah.
Winning off the field.
Yeah. No stranger said it's your time. Okay, you guys get it.
Yeah. No stranger said you've lived long enough.
That's enough life for you, buddy.
Therefore, you are.
Winning off the field.
Beltway Blitz is next. We're at Third Hill Brewing in Silver Spring off Georgia Avenue. We're Grant and Danny.